Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Todd.
Well, I feel like a lot has happened here in the past 4 or 5 days or so, right? Daylight saving comes to an end. We flip the calendar from October to November. The baseball season ends. College basketball begins. Halloween is now gone, and apparently we're on to Christmas because nobody likes to monetize Thanksgiving.
Oh, geez. Did you watch the game? Did you watch the World Series and that ending?
Admittedly, as a baseball fan, I don't know that I've ever seen a more compelling World Series. Every game had something just a little bit bonkers, and that Game 7 was all sorts of bonkers. So, yes, I was glued to it. In fact, I was at Lane Grindle's house watching it with the Brewers broadcaster. He's one of my neighbors, so we were hanging out watching the game. I didn't know when to leave. It was getting late. I was getting tired. An amazing series. I don't know what side you were on, but the Dodgers earned the victory, but an incredible series to watch.
It was very interesting because I've said this on the show before, but once the Brewers are out, I'm out. I'm definitely out. When it comes to the NBA, that's different for me. I'll watch till the end with that, typically. But when my team's out, I'm out. But I will say we did go. We were coming home from dinner, and we decided to stop at Pilot Project in downtown Milwaukee to just grab one beer and watch the game. And it was really interesting to take in. There was actually a wedding on one side, and there were people watching the World Series on the other side. And it was really interesting to hear the cheers as to who the majority of people were cheering for. And they were not cheering for the Dodgers. And I think just because the Dodgers beat us, it just feels like you don't want to cheer for them. But man, two very talented teams.
No doubt about it. I was rooting for the Blue Jays, in all honesty, but just all sorts of oohs and ahs just watching that game. Just as a baseball fan, wow, just an unbelievable end to the season. 110 here on WTMJ.
And now it's time for three big things on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one, the government shutdown is on track to be the longest in history. Republicans and Democrats remain at odds over reopening the government. Meanwhile, Americans disapprove of how President Trump, as well as the Democrats and Republicans, are handling the shutdown. CBS congressional correspondent Caitlin Huey Burns has an update on where lawmakers are with a shutdown right now.
It is hard to believe that tomorrow will set the record for the longest shutdown in history because lawmakers are certainly not acting like it at this point. The Senate is not expected to come back here to Washington until later this afternoon at 3 p.m. We don't know if they're going to have a vote yet on another vote on this continuing resolution to fund the government, although John Thune kind of teed it up last week.
So we are now in day 34 of the government shutdown. That is just one day short of the record-setting government closure during President Trump's first term.
OpenAI is tapping Amazon's massive cloud operations to handle the ChatGPT's creators' increasing workloads. CBS News business reporter Jason Brooks explains.
In the latest eye-opening AI infrastructure deal, OpenAI says it will purchase $38 billion worth of data center capacity from Amazon using NVIDIA's processors. OpenAI at first will use existing Amazon data centers, with Amazon eventually building out that capacity for OpenAI, which has been on a spending spree of late, having announced agreements with NVIDIA, Oracle, Broadcom, and Google totaling a combined $1.4 trillion. San Francisco-based OpenAI had an exclusive cloud agreement with Microsoft until earlier this year.
Amazon stock continuing to rally higher on the news of the deal. NVIDIA stock also up pretty significant today. Now, the partnership is a big win for Amazon here in this whole AI cloud race, allowing it to better compete with the likes of Microsoft and Google for AI workloads. We talked last week about how if something goes wrong with Amazon, the internet goes wrong, right? Just how it controls like everything in the cloud. Well, now it's trying to really get into this space with a massive landmark deal here of $38 billion.
Number three, Sesame Street has another new home. The popular kids show is being relocated to Netflix.
The new season of Sesame Street debuts next week.
Sunny day.
And while the theme song will be the same, the format might be a little different thanks to a new partner, Netflix. The main story at the top of the show will be 11 minutes long instead of 9, better to connect with kids, the creators say. The show could also break the fourth wall and talk straight to children, with characters telling their feelings or asking for advice. Because Netflix has such a global audience, the new season will be streamed in 30 different languages. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
30 different languages. How about that? Big Bird sounds different when he's talking in Spanish.
It's where I learned Spanish.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like the early days. Yeah, I learned to count to 10 in Spanish watching Sesame Street.
Well, that's cool. That's a great memory.
Definitely.
I was looking at Hollywood Reporter had the trailer up for it, and the animals, the puppets, they're going to the races, it says. I always forget, which one is the red one? Is that Grover?
Elmo
is red. Or is
that
Elmo?
Kind of a bluish purple.
That's right. I think it was Elmo. Elmo who starts it, and then all of a sudden they're speeding off in a race car. It looks kind of fun. Hollywood Reporter has an article up, and it says, the streaming giant revealed the trailer for its first Sesame Street season, the 56th season overall of the iconic preschool series. And then it said, where is it? Oh, I liked this. It said, Netflix will release Sesame Street episodes 4 at a time over 3 separate premiere periods. Think Stranger Things season 5, just with much furrier monsters.
I was always scared a little bit by the count. I thought he was just a little too creepy when I was young.
Yeah.
Now that I'm getting older, I can relate to Oscar the Grouch. And Snuffleupagus, now in my old age, makes me think mind-expanding drugs were used to create Sesame Street.
Oh,
how do you come up with that?
That's fun. Bert and Ernie. What about Bert and Ernie?
Are they related?
I feel like everybody's been talking about Bert and Ernie
brothers?
Over the years.
I don't know. A lot of time in the tub together, that's for sure. 1:15 here on WTMJ.
It's time for Pack Yak on Wisconsin's Midday News.
All right, well, not as excited about this as I thought I would be. It was kind of a mess at Lambeau Field Sunday afternoon.
What happened?
Well, it didn't start that way, right? The Packers' defense forced a 3-and-out. The offense was easing down the field. Looked like they were going to score, get into the end zone, and then this happened.
Screen pass. Savion Williams, the rookie, trying to maneuver. Nick Scott, the safety, was in front of him, and then the rest of the team rallies. That ball came out. That ball was ruled to be a fumble, and Scott came out of there. And if this is a Carolina takeaway, that is desperately needed for a 2-touchdown underdog.
Well, it was, and Carolina remained a 2-touchdown underdog at that point. But yes, it was a fumble. It kind of changed the complexion of the game, but it was also a microcosm of the game. When it looked like things were going right, they suddenly weren't for the Packers, and they could just never get out of that rut. They only had the ball 3 times in the first half. A missed field goal, and they had an interception in the second half, to begin the second half in that third quarter. Just one mistake after another against a team that on paper they should have beat, but also now on paper has as many wins as the Green Bay Packers. So maybe they shouldn't have been overlooking them.
Yeah, and that was one of the things. I mean, we started off well. Packers with the first points on the board with that field goal, and it was Jordan Love's birthday. He was turning 27 years old. It was kind of interesting at the start of the game. There was a reporter on the sidelines interviewing him, and at the very end was like, by the way, happy birthday. And it was really cute because he kind of like broke his character for a moment. He was like, thanks so much, and had a big smile, and then went off running, you know, to the sidelines. And so you thought it was going to be a good game. But yeah, maybe the team thought they were going to win, and that played into it. Some people did speculate that before the game even started.
So the Packers came back late and were able to tie the game in the fourth quarter. And again, it was after a half's worth of miscues, kind of all over the place. Nonetheless, they tied the game.
Tied it up, 13-13.
But they left just enough time on the clock here for Carolina to move down into field goal position.
Trying to win at Lambeau. Hold is down. The kick is up. Into the win. It is good!
So adding injury to insult here, the Packers not only lose the game, but we learned today they've lost their Pro Bowl trajectory tight end. Tucker Kraft is playing such good football.
He was.
And he suffered a serious knee injury in the third quarter, and he is now done for the year. So that's a torn ACL. Who knows if he'll be able to return by the time next season starts. And he's like the central figure, right? You look at a few different players. Jordan Love is one of them, the running back, Josh Jacobs, and then Tucker Kraft. Like, those three guys have played, by and large, pretty well, sort of heart and soul players of this team.
Well, and we see what he does out on the field, and he's just been awesome. But also, there's so much talk about what he does inside of that locker room as well. So I think this is a big loss on two levels, though I suppose being injured, you can still do some of that inside the locker room, right? But it's just not the same.
A lot of mistakes, and Matt LaFleur even taking the blame, putting it on his own shoulders. I watched the game with my daughters. We got back from their soccer matches in Racine. We got back. We were watching the game. It got late into the fourth quarter. The Packers were down, I think it was 13-6. Looked like they were poised to score a touchdown. The drive kind of fizzled after a third and three play that went backwards 5 yards. Okay, so now it's like, oh, now it's fourth and eight. Just kick your field goal, get your points on the board, make it to 13-9. You're in the fourth quarter. And then you need a touchdown to get ahead, and you're going to force Carolina to score some points. And for some reason, Matt LaFleur decided, you know what? Fourth and eight, after that last play went backwards, chip shot field goal territory, let's go for it. Let's give this a rip. Let's see how it goes.
You know, hindsight's 20/20. I wish we would have taken the points. Didn't do that there. Yeah. Bad decision. Yeah,
maybe if he got his face out of the play sheet and actually watched what was happening on the field, he could have made an educated decision there. My 10-year-old said, why wouldn't you just kick it here? Well, good question, Riley. I agree with you. Why not put points on the board? Like, what are you doing?
But also, speaking of our kicks, all of our kicks weren't good.
Well, that's true as well.
There makes me a little concerned, too, moving forward.
Now I got a couple of misses here in back-to-back weeks for Brandon McManus. Three, as a matter of fact, in consecutive games after he's back from injury.
And that one, I mean, with 1 second left, Windy going for the field goal, I mean, that just didn't even look good, that one. It was so off, right?
Just yoinked it.
I mean, there's sometimes you're watching and you're like, ooh, is it going to get it? Is it going to? You don't know. This one, it just, that's not going in.
So here's what I've learned about the Packers. It would not surprise me in the least bit if they came back and beat the defending champion Eagles on Monday Night Football 1 week from tonight.
It does feel like it's been going like that.
Right. This is a team that is very hard to figure out, and they've played well in some of the biggest games of the season with wins over the Lions, road win, very emotional night in Pittsburgh facing the Steelers, and then they lay an egg against the likes of the Browns and Carolina Panthers where they become their own worst enemy, which brings up what you mentioned earlier, Jessica, this idea of maybe looking ahead to the Eagles. They talked about it all last week. Not a trap game. We don't believe in trap games. Well, this, by definition, was a trap game.
You dismissed the whole trap game thing. I get that. Was there any peeking ahead to Philadelphia, you think, this week?
No. They came in and played the game they wanted to play, where they wanted to play keep away, run the football, make it just a game where we have to consistently execute on offense. And they did it better than we did it.
So Packers lose the game, but still, they have the most wins in their division. So now you look at the Bears, you look at the Lions and the Packers. They all have 5 wins. And then the Vikings just beat the Lions, are you know, a game or so off. So a very competitive division here as you get to the mid part of the season.
Can we just for a moment, where is it? So sometimes I take notes during the game if I'm watching it, and I did watch it later. I watched it last night on I recorded it, so I watched it like 7 o'clock, and my husband, I had just dropped him off at the airport. So every once in a while, if it's like that and I'm not with a bunch of people, I'll take notes. Can we just, where is it? I was just taking a peek. I'm like, Greg, maybe you'll remember what this was. I vaguely remember, but it was something, I wrote something like, Rico Suave celebrating too much, too pumps up.
Yeah, that was Rico Dowdle, the running back for the Carolina Panthers, who's had a really nice season, by the way, but he got into the end zone and scored a touchdown. You did a celebration that was a coordinated effort with some other teammates.
That's right. Like
somehow
four of them or
they got a flag for excessive celebration, which
two
I didn't.
Pumps too much.
Yeah, I guess it was a little over the top, but I don't know. I didn't see that in real time. But what happened is it pushed their extra point back 15 yards, and then the guy missed it. So instead of 14 points, they had 13, which allowed the Packers to ultimately tie the game at 13 when they scored their touchdown. But yes, a celebration penalty. Essentially cost him a point.
That just cracked me up. Carolina touchdown. Oh, I wrote. Rico Suave celebrated a little too much.
That's my best interpretation of what you wrote down.
Yeah, no, that's it. Ding, you got it.
Sorry you put yourself through that game at 7 o'clock last night.
Yeah, that's okay. I still like to watch.
You just text me. Say, hey, should I put myself through this?
No.
Should I do it or not?
Because I like to watch. And the whole thing is, actually, this is funny, because what happened? I think I was making dinner, and then I went to go put it on, and I realized I had the news on, and I realized they were going to go through some highlights. So all of a sudden, I was like, no. So I was making noise to myself, and I was rushing over, wasn't looking at the TV, rushing over, just making noise, so I couldn't hear what was going on. I didn't want to hear any highlights. And Greg, I made it. Made it in time. Didn't see what was going on. Because that's hard in today's day and age. Usually my girlfriends are texting me. Nobody really texted about the game yesterday, which is kind of interesting now that I think about it. And yeah, with social media, it's hard to stay in the dark until hours later. But well, I made it happen yesterday.
Yeah, unfortunately, you put yourself through it. But kudos. But then could have saved you a few hours of time. That was
that's
a tough one to watch.
I'm a fan. You got to go through the losses, too.
Calm and comfortable conditions here. Looks like that going to be that way throughout the course of the week here. Hopefully you've adjusted now. Your body is back on its normal clock. Does it take you a long time?
I don't really notice this one that much, to be honest. But don't people usually kind of notice it? I feel like give it another day, maybe more tomorrow than today. Isn't your adrenaline just kind of going? A lot of people just feel like you fall back. Okay, you feel more the fact that you got to sleep in a little bit, maybe, like you gained that hour.
Yeah, I didn't feel groggy getting up on Sunday morning. I didn't really have anything to get up for specifically. Yes, I was up a little bit earlier. Just that's the way my clock works. I kind of was up about an hour earlier, right? But I didn't feel groggy, didn't feel off. It was just, okay, this is the new time. Get up and go.
How many clocks did you have to change?
None. Everything
one?
Is good. Yeah, so my microwave and oven, they sync together via Bluetooth for some reason. Oh. So the time stays the same.
Okay, fancy.
Didn't have to touch it.
I had to do my microwave and I had to do my stove.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, and then technically you do press a button in the car.
Yes.
But
you toggle it on or
yet,
off.
Though.
Okay. You might want to do that sooner than later. I don't know if Lauren Larson has done that. TMJ4 meteorologist joining us. How many clocks, Lauren, did you have to manually change at your house?
None, actually.
Wow, none for you too?
Well, it's not that I have smart electronics, it's that I don't have a microwave.
Yeah.
So I just didn't have to change anything. But like you said, the car, and we actually do have like an alarm clock type thing in the weather center. And I was the one to change that one yesterday. It gave me a little bit of a heart attack at 8:30. I was like, oh my gosh, we're a lot closer to showtime than I thought.
Okay, so random question for you, but I've got to ask now. Do you not have a microwave because you're trying to be healthier or you just don't have a microwave? Because I notice I don't use my microwave nearly as much as I used to, but I still do use it. Like last night when the tamales said put it in the microwave for 3 minutes.
Okay.
Well, I moved to Milwaukee in September, technically, and my old apartment in Green Bay had one included. So I've been like considering buying one and I just really haven't gotten around to it yet.
See, fun facts about Lauren Larson. It's nice
stuff.
To get to know you a little bit better.
Definitely.
Now on to the weather, we say.
Yeah,
walk
us through the week here. I did see maybe even a chance to hit 60 potentially tomorrow. So a nice start to the week here.
Yeah, definitely above normal as we're talking upper 50s. Like you said, maybe hitting 60 degrees for Tuesday and maybe Wednesday too. So it is a warm start. It's pretty windy out there today. I do want to say, even though our highs are in the upper 50s, it doesn't really feel like it because we are seeing such gusty winds out there right now, as high as even 30 miles an hour. Tomorrow, the winds will be a little bit calmer. So I think Tuesday is going to be the best day of the week. Even though it is still warm as we look towards Wednesday, we can expect a few more clouds. So if you're a fan of the sunshine and warmer temperatures, which most people are, we're going with Tuesday for the best day. More clouds are building in as we look towards Wednesday and Thursday. Temperatures are closer to normal in the lower 50s. And then as we head into the weekend, we can expect some rain. And maybe a few snowflakes mixed in there, too, on Sunday.
Snowflakes?
We're seeing a mixture. Yeah. Do I think there will be snow on the ground? No. But we are, you know, we are seeing maybe a few snowflakes. So that's for Sunday. Ugh. It is still 5, 6 days away. So this could definitely change. It could move north. It could move south. But there's a small chance.
I like snow within time. Don't get me wrong. I'm from Wisconsin. I do like the snow. But can we just, this time of the year, can we call them flurries? Would that be appropriate? I feel like it makes us feel better, flurries. We might see a few flurries.
Sure. We can go with flurries. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
And I do want to know, because you said, you know, it comes with time. Yesterday, November 2nd, actually is the average first date where we do see some flurries.
Mm-hmm.
November 14th is the first time that we, on average, see measurable snow. And then 1 inch of snow, that date isn't until December 2nd. So we do still have time to get there for it to be normal. Again, I don't want to cause panic. I don't think that we're seeing a lot of snow this weekend. You know, it just is kind of the first time we're looking out in those weather models and seeing flurries.
That's funny that you say first measurable snow, because throughout the years reporting here in Wisconsin, I do remember oftentimes thinking that sometimes I would need to say the first measurable snow. Because it wasn't an inch, and some people didn't get it, so you'd have to remind them, like, the first measurable snow. Yeah, we got a little bit. It wasn't a ton, but it was enough to measure. So that's a good point there.
Yeah.
Perfect clarification. Yeah, flurries means it's maybe even melting before it hits the ground, right? It's not going to stick. But measurable snow, then I got a different picture
in my
mind.
You could stick your tongue out and just get that little flurry.
Well, let's stay away from all the measurable stuff here for a little while. Lauren, we'll check it again tomorrow. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, sounds good. Have a great Monday, guys.
You too. 144 on WTMJ. A meeting later this afternoon with Milwaukee's Historic Preservation Committee set to consider very interesting permanent historic designation for two landmark buildings here in Milwaukee. Will it happen? What are they looking at? We'll go through it after this. A meeting later today, it's going to be an interesting one, I have a feeling. Milwaukee Alderman Bob Bauman asking for a permanent historic designation for the UW Panther Arena, formerly known as the Mecca, and the Miller High Life Theater. Located right next to one another, as a matter of fact, Milwaukee's Historic Preservation Committee is going to consider the resolution today. We welcome in WTMJ's Adam Roberts, who will be there at the meeting to try and see where this thing goes. It should be noted that both of these buildings are owned by the Wisconsin Center District, and Bob Bauman is trying to figure out what exactly the Wisconsin Center District has in mind for the future of these sites.
Which is curious, because Mr. Bauman is a member of that Wisconsin Center District board, and so he's in all those meetings, he hears all of these conversations, any files that would be brought forward, he's a part of those conversations. But yes, as you mentioned, the alderman has a proposal today that would grant permanent historic designation to both of these buildings, which, to be fair, are quite old. The Mecca, former Milwaukee Arena, is 75 years old as of this year. And then the Milwaukee Auditorium, known now as the Miller High Life Theater, is over 100 and, I believe, 15 years old. So quite some age on both of these buildings. And so what's interesting now is the phrasing and the why. Like, why would these buildings be given this designation? Well, according to some city ordinances that I've gone through, if this were to be passed, and it would have to go through the Common Council as well. So that's one big thing. Whatever happens today, that doesn't mean that that is what's going to happen going forward. But it would require both buildings, if the Center District wanted to tear them down, you would have to deconstruct them rather than full out bulldoze or demolish, which would require you save the materials from the building. So you'd have to be very strategic. And that can be very expensive up front because of needing to carefully dismantle those products. So I see the alderman working here in trying to make it as difficult as possible on both the financial front and the process front if the Center District wanted to bulldoze these buildings, making it a little harder to just walk up and knock them both down.
Well, and you mentioned old. Both these buildings are old, but some people would say, but they're historic. I mean, I feel like you have the people who are like, they're old. We could have something better. We could have a hotel that everybody's been talking about. We need a much larger hotel, right? You keep hearing that over and over. There's a chorus of that right now. But then you have people who look at that and say, yeah, old, but historic. I love it. I don't want those torn down.
So that's a good point. So in order to qualify for historic preservation, there's certain, qualifications that you have to meet. And the alderman has suggested that both of these buildings qualify for five of them. And just really quickly, they are that they are culturally and historically significant. I think that's fair to say for both of those buildings, that they were the site for historic events. And one of the ones that the alderman mentions is that President Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, of course, was shot before he gave a speech at the auditorium in 1912, and that's connected in history books. Anytime you mention that President Roosevelt was shot, he then gave an hours-long speech at the Milwaukee Auditorium. Also, that they have architectural merit. They're associated with master architects. In fact, I believe the arena was built by the same people who built our old home at Radio City on Capitol Drive. Mm. And then also that they have landmark identity. If you see the arena, you know the sort of half circle over the top, or with the renovations they've done to the Milwaukee Auditorium, you recognize that facade as you come up to the building. So those are some of the qualifications the alderman is using to rationalize his process here.
The old Mecca was built in 1950, right? Mm-hmm. It's still the home for Milwaukee Panthers men's basketball, the Milwaukee Wave, and the Milwaukee Admirals. If this arena was shut down, knocked down, UWM would have a home. They could go back to campus and they could play on site at the Clatchy Center. Now, the Wave and Panthers would not, or excuse me, the Wave and Milwaukee Admirals would have to figure something out, and mm-hmm. it would not be a great situation in the short term. The other arena, or the theater, I should say, goes back to 1909, as you mentioned. So when you bring up the historic nature, my mind also goes to maintenance costs. And is the juice worth the squeeze when it comes to maintaining these buildings? Because these are ancient, in the case of the theater, and old in the case of Milwaukee Panthers Arena, which I would describe as functional, but it's certainly not state-of-the-art. So is it worth trying to make it that, or just leaving the walls up because of history? Is there a functional need for it? Like, I understand why there's questions here, because the cost of keeping it up and running, that could spiral.
That's right. And the I believe the auditorium, the last time it had major renovations was some 20 years ago, I think 2003, when they completely reworked how that looks. And we see that structure existing today. I think the arena recently had, I think a scoreboard was added to it a couple of years ago. But other than that, to your point, Greg, if you walk in to the UWM Panther Arena, it feels like a building that was constructed in the early 50s and hasn't really been altered that
much. Yeah, no, there's no club level. There are no suites, right? It's a functional arena for the sports that it hosts and different events. But it's also kind of Band-Aids behind the scenes, keeping it up, much like County Stadium was back before it was knocked down in favor of then Miller Park.
So another thing that's interesting is this case study, this best use study that everyone's been talking about. What is this going to suggest? Now, that will be due out in January. So we've still got a few months before we'll hear what this group from Chicago who's analyzing, okay, what's the best use of this space, will present. But if you hear the voices that are attached to the story, they seem to, at least one of them, suggest, that being Alderman Bauman, that the people who will be making decisions already know what's coming.
Believe you me, he is in communication with these consultants, and he has already received a preliminary report of the results of these focus groups. He is a kind of hands-on guy that would not just leave this to chance and just cut these consultants loose and then wait a year for whatever report they're going to provide. He's dealing with them real time on a regular basis.
So the he that Alderman Bauman is referring to there is Marty Brooks, who's right. The CEO of the Center District. Now, Brooks has multiple times refuted these allegations. He says, I have not seen the study. I don't know what they're going to suggest. And even if they do suggest we build the Convention Center Hotel, which, as you mentioned, Jessica, that's been on the eyes of this group for a long time, that doesn't mean that's what we have to do. We can keep both buildings. We can keep one building, or we could tear both of them down. But when Brooks was on the morning show a little while ago, he did admit that whatever the result is, it's going to create a lot of speculation.
Doing anything in the city requires it to be thoughtful and integrate within the entire community. So could it get chaotic in January? Absolutely, but that's okay. Let's have healthy discussions about the future of our city.
So that's Marty Brooks on Wisconsin's Morning News about a month or so ago.
Didn't he also basically defend being in communication with these people at the heart of the study, too? Which, it feels like it makes sense. He said, if I remember correctly in the morning news, he said something like, I'm in communication with them as far as how is the study going along? Are we going to hit the timelines that we need to hit? Now, whether that, you know, I'm going to take him for his word on that, but it sounds like that's what he was saying. Not that he's, you know, talking to them about what exactly have you found already.
Right. And that's hard to parse through because one side's going to say one thing and stick with it, and the other side will stick with their points as well. And ultimately, we just kind of have to wait until that study comes out in January because, again, even if this historical preservation is passed through, that doesn't mean, A, that that will be granted because it has to go through the Common Council. But then also, even if this goes through and they are granted historical status, the Center District could still tear both of them down if that's what they decide to do. It'll just be a little bit harder to do so.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks are watching this too very closely because coming in February of 2026, Landmark Credit Union Live, 4,500-person venue, they're already booking acts. Not going to see Broadway shows there, I don't believe, but certainly in direct competition with the theater for musical acts.
Seems like a few years ago, I remember we were bandying around the phrase the venue wars because all of these things were popping up. You had the proposed venue at the soccer stadium site, which has yet to form at all. You've got the new Landmark Credit Union Live. You've got the arena, or excuse me, the High Life Theater, which is still hosting events of that mid-size, kind of the same tier Landmark would be going for. So seems even though we're not using the term anymore, the idea is still festering a bit.
Very similar capacities for those arenas. Riverside's like 1,300 people. The Pabst is, you know, maybe 1,500 or so, probably a little smaller than that. That's in a different sort of class. But Landmark, right. Credit Union Live and the theater, both about 4,000. Like that's direct competition. And you know one of those arenas is going to be state-of-the-art. That's mm-hmm. the new one. Interesting stuff, Adam. Enjoy your time out there. Bring a sandwich.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, you bet.